Welcome to Running's Lessons for Life, a podcast series in which we delve into the stories of well-known South African athletes and their most memorable races. I'm Pippa Hudson, and over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to some of our top long-distance runners about the races they won, the races they lost, and the races they still haven't managed to finish. We've asked each of our participating athletes to choose one race that taught them some of their greatest lessons in sport and in life. We hope you enjoy listening to their stories. Our athlete today is nothing short of a South African legend. He has represented the country at 8 Paralympic Games, bringing home 8 medals in the process. He's won the wheelchair title at the Boston Marathon a record 10 times, as well as notching up 2 wins each in the New York and Los Angeles marathons. He's also played a key role in developing wheelchair racing in South Africa, including promoting the inclusion of an elite wheelchair racing division in our own Cape Town Marathon, a dream which was realized for the first time last year. He is a 2-time world champion and a winner of a prestigious Laureus Award, as well as the Order of Ikhamanga in silver. He is Ernst van Dijk. Let's take a listen to what the road has taught him. Ernst, we're so used to seeing you winning on the road. I think a lot of listeners might have forgotten that your early competition was actually in the swimming pool. Can you remind us when you made the switch from swimming to wheelchair racing?
Oh, yeah. So swimming was a huge part of my life growing up as a youngster in school. And I came to Stellenbosch as a university as a first year student, and joined the swimming program there. And then in '92 we got the news that we were let back into the international sporting arena. Mm. And overnight I became part of that small Paralympic team of 8 or 9 athletes that went to the Barcelona Games. And that was where I had my first international swimming exposure. But some things happened, during Barcelona and my wheelchair racing on the track, which made me realize that, that was a part of my life that I would like to leave behind and start focusing on wheelchair racing, track marathons and something around the pool.
And here we are today, all these years later, and just look what you've achieved. Ernst, the chair itself is a fascinating and highly technical piece of equipment. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what it takes to race at this level? What kind of equipment you need?
It's a very hot topic at the moment because the sport basically has gone mainstream. Mm-hmm. And which entails is we are now fully part of the Abbott Marathon Major Series. There's huge prize money, up for grabs. The competition has become really intense, and so has the competition for the best equipment.
Yeah.
So when I started the sport, you could buy a customized racing wheelchair for around 55,000 ZAR. And these days, to buy a chair that's competitive with the top guys, you are probably looking at $500,000 or
more. Wow.
Because it's a fully customized monocoque carbon fiber chair. And unlike with bicycles, where if you have a mold, you can pull off 2,000 frames and you sell them. With a racing wheelchair, which is 100% customized to the user, you pull one off the mold. So the big cost of the chair is in the mold. There are still athletes, and we saw this last week when the world record in the 1,500 meters on the track was broken. Obviously, the first guy over the line was in a racing chair made by Sauber, the Formula One company. But the guy right on his heels, crossing the line with him, was an athlete from Kuwait in stock standard equipment, which just showed the point, It's not so much about the equipment, but it's still about the heart and the lungs and the muscles that is powering that chair.
Incredible. What a story. Ernst, how often do you have to replace those chairs? If you look after them well, do they have at least a long lifespan given that kind of price tag?
Yeah, that was the nice thing about the carbon chairs coming into the picture. So when I was racing aluminium frames, with the amount of traveling that I was doing and the amount of racing and training, I would have to replace that frame every year because the fatigue or the metal fatigue on the welds and the material was just too much and it was too risky and they developed cracks over time.
Yeah.
Carbon fiber is way more durable. So, you can use a carbon fiber chair for 5 years and or more and you will be perfectly fine. And what's nice about it is if they keep on using the one, the next 5-year cycle from your same mold, you'll get a chair that fits exactly like the old one used to fit. Where with aluminium chairs, it was always like, somebody cuts a tube and they weld the tube and they're 1 or 2 millimeters out, and then it's slightly different to the chair you had before, and then you would need to get used to it all over again. So pros and cons on the technology development, but it's certainly, you know, going in the right direction.
Thank you for that that really interesting insight. Now, we asked you to choose a particular race from which you have learned life lessons of one kind or another. And not surprisingly, you've chosen to speak about the Boston Marathon, Ernst. And I don't know if you have a particular Boston Marathon or just that race generally that you want to talk about to us today. But obviously, it holds a very special place in your heart. It's a race you have won a record 10 times, including 6 consecutive victories between 2001 and 2006, a world record-breaking time in 2004, and I believe a personal best time in 2017 for a marathon. Is there one in particular that stands out, or do you want to talk to us generally about your experience of the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, you know, if you've done a race for, I think this year will be my 24th time that I'm doing the race. It will be my last time as well. But if you've done a race that many times, there are so many stories that I could share. You know, every race had a story to it. But the one that gets my heart is the first one. The first time I won the Boston Marathon, I went in as a rookie. You know, it was the first time I raced the race. And I just took off like a bat out of hell because I thought if I can get ahead, then I can upset the norm and just do my thing. And the way these races are broadcasted is, you know, the wheelchair race would go first 5 minutes before the runners, and then 10 minutes later the runners would start, and basically the runners would get the TV coverage. So we get the TV coverage for the first 5 minutes, and then maybe when we finish we get some more TV coverage. On this day, this dense cloud of fog moved in right behind me as I took off. And when the camera crew on the motorbike dropped back to cover the running race, they struggled to get the signal through the cloud fog, or the fog cloud that was hanging over us. And consequently, they had to move forward and cover me for 45 minutes to have some footage to show. And as a rookie, you know, my best sponsor was a local pub in Stellenbosch, which was funding me to try and get me around the world. And there suddenly I was broadcasted around the world for 45 minutes with my local sponsor in Stellenbosch being a pup on TV, which was a great story. And then I won, and it was huge news in South Africa.
And huge news that you made over and over and over again. I mean, Ernst, over the years, I'm sure every race has been special in its own way. You say that this year is going to be your last one. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about making that decision? Why the 24th and last?
Yeah, I'm celebrating, and people maybe not realize this, but I'm celebrating my 50th birthday this year. Okay. And, you know, there's no age categories in my sport. You're elite, and you race against elite athletes. So I'm starting to feel a bit worn out, if you want to put it like the way. I've been doing this for 30 years. My joints are starting to tell me that it's time to take it easy. And my career has fast-tracked to the point where I'm really, really struggling to find time to just do a workout every day. So it was time where, and I did it last year, and I thought I'll just do it, you know, for fun and just to stay in it. But when you are racing in the second or the third group, and you know, if I had time, I could probably still be challenging in the first group. It takes the fun away from it, and it becomes a frustration. And I just made the call that I will do my rounds this year. I will go to all my favorite races. I will say my goodbyes and move on. And I mean, training and fitness has been such a big part of my life. It's not something I will just leave behind. So I've set my goal, you know, to in the near future do a half Ironman and maybe moving up to a full Ironman.
Gosh.
But at least there won't be that competitive element where I'm chasing guys that I knew I could probably have beaten in the past.
Ernst, 1 year sticks out in the memories of the Boston Marathon for anybody, and that is the year 2013, when the race was so terribly impacted by the bomb attack. I don't know how aware you were of what was going on that day, how much of it you experienced at first hand, or whether you had already finished your race by the time the drama unfolded. Do you want to share with us a little bit of a memory of that year?
Yeah, 2013, I was still fighting to get that 10th victory. And on that specific year, I finished second, and I'd just gone back to the hotel. I had a quick shower, and I went back to the finish line area because one of my sponsors, which is a hospital group in Boston, had a charity team running to raise some money for a new hospital. And I was in a hotel overlooking the finish line, when the explosions went off, and the second one was right across the street from us. So we had a window view to all of that carnage that was going on. And that does change something in you. So 2014, when I went back, the whole world for us had changed at marathons, because suddenly people realized this is quite an exposed event. There's a lot of risk involved. It's open. How do you close off 42 kilometers of road for a sporting event when anybody can, you know, do an act like this? So that changed. You were carrying a clear plastic bag to the start line. There were metal detectors. There were dogs at races to look for devices. So the whole world had changed. We lined up in 2014, and I went through some change in myself as well, because I saw people that got hurt off, and I met them after the race in 2014, you know, and made those connections to some of a little girl that lost their leg as well in the explosions. So there was a lot of emotion involved when I lined up for 2014, and I went off and I won that year, and it became my 10th and my final victory. And I just broke down after the race because there was just so much emotion involved. And if you go back today and you look at the way I crossed the finish line when I broke, you know, when I did that 10th victory, my demeanor was completely different to what I've been in the past. There was no celebration, you know, when I crossed that line. I basically dropped my head and put my hand on my heart in a moment of silence for those people that got hurt, and afterwards broke down quite badly, because it was a very emotional day from a lot of aspects and point of views. And I was just amazed at how Boston as a city stood up and how that continued after that terror attack.
Yeah. Well, we wish you all the best for the 24th and final Boston Marathon later this year. Ernst, before I let you go, though, I think it would be remiss of me not to talk about the role you've played in seeing an elite wheelchair division added to our own Cape Town Marathon. I mean, after all the years of not just running your own successful races, but also doing so much to encourage youngsters to act as an ambassador for your sport, what did it mean to you to finally be able to line up and compete on home soil as you did last year?
Oh, it was an incredible feeling, you know, to be in a mainstream event like the Cape Town Marathon, to have an elite professional wheelchair division with athletes from all over the world joining us. You know, that was like a tick box in my life that I wanted to see happen. And I'm so happy that I saw it last year, and hopefully we'll see it again this year. But it does create a platform where we can look for local talent and develop local talent and have them compete locally against the best of the world to get that exposure. Mm. We all know the only way to develop talent is through exposure, to compete against the world's best. And now we have an event that will bring them here and give those youngsters a chance to get that exposure.
Ernst, the exposure is one thing. From what you've said about the cost of the equipment, that's a huge mountain to climb for somebody who doesn't have very, very deep pockets. Is enough being done to pour money into the development of the sport and to let those athletes be able to have those big dreams of competing in a carbon fiber chair that can see them over the finish line one day?
Yeah, you know, it is tricky. And that's what's so encouraging to us, is that we still see athletes from war-torn countries getting in stock standard equipment and competing with the best athletes with the most expensive equipment.
Yeah.
So the entry-level equipment, you know, it is still there. It is available. It's good enough to get you up there. And then you build your career from there. It's the same that I went through. You know, a lot of sacrifices had to be made to get there. And people will, you know, athletes with enough aspiration and dreams, they will do those sacrifices and they will achieve it.
My final question is probably a very difficult one to answer, because you've had so many accolades and achievements along the way, not just the medals and the titles and the wins, but also a Laureus Award, the awarding of national orders. Is there any one individual success that stands out and means the most to you for some reason, Ernst?
I was never huge on awards, because to me it was like, you know, a few guys get into a room and they throw a few CVs around and then they decide, you know, who gets the award for the year. But the Laureus Sportsman of the Year with a Disability Award was a big one for me. It was, you know, you go up against a global field. So it's any sport, any sportsman or woman with a disability across the globe. And to win that, get that recognition in 2006 is probably one of the highlights of my career and level of recognition that I received. So that one is very special. And consequently, my involvement with the Laureus Sport for Good Foundation and the good work we do across the country. And this year we have one of our programs, you know, as a finalist for at the Laureus Sport the Laureus Sports Awards this year.
Yep.
So a local program out of Durban with adaptive surfing, and it's fantastic that, you know, that's achievable for us.
Yeah. Well, it's achievable in part because athletes like you have led the way and shown it can be done. Ernst, I want to thank you for that role you've played as a sporting ambassador, and thank you so much for your time speaking to us today for our podcast series. It's been an absolute privilege to have you be part of it. Thank you for tuning in for Running's Lessons for Life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share the link with your friends and family and encourage them to listen as well. Who knows, perhaps a future Comrades champion is out there right now in need of a bit of encouragement and inspiration. Tune in again next week for another edition of Running's Lessons for Life. Bye for now.